I'm Tim Z. Hernandez. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. My guest today is the prolific and fearless artist Annie Rachel Lanzilotto. And when I met Annie, she was a visiting performing artist at Naropa in 2005, where she taught physical theater. She was my own mentor, and I learned so much about physicality and writing from her. And she also came out a few years ago with this wonderful memoir, L is for Lion, which is just, I mean, she's just an incredible all-around writer. And I look forward to speaking with her about her latest work, Hard Candy, Pitch Roll, Yaw. And we'll just jump right into that interview now. Annie Lanzilotto, coming up on Words on a Wire. Bronx-born and raised, Annie Rachel Lanzilotto is the author of Lambda Literary Award finalist L is for Lion, an Italian Bronx butch freedom memoir, and the collection of poetry called Schist Song. She's a singer and songwriter, and her albums include Swamp Juice, Blue Pill, Carry My Coffee, and Never Argue with a Jackass. And we have her on the phone from upstate New York. Annie Lanzilotto, welcome to Words on a Wire.
It's wonderful to be with you, always.
Annie, you know, I always start things off with a few questions to our special guests, but this book of poetry that you have, this monster of a collection of poems and thoughts and heartfelt anthems, I just can't wait for our listeners to hear your voice and your work. And I want to get as many poems out of you as I can in the next 25 minutes. That's my goal. So would you mind just kicking us off with one of your poems?
That's my goal, too, in life, by the way.
Nice.
Here's one called Palm Trees and Caution Tape. For the victims of the gay nightclub Pulse massacre on Latin night, June 12, 2016, Orlando, Florida. If only the prick went in there with his fists for an old school barroom brawl. If only anyone in this land had the gravitas of Gandhi, whose hunger stroked till all weapons were laid down. If only our gay bodies weren't veritable targets for boys who thought they were straight, testosterone rage. If only estrogen shots were given as loading doses to straight boys in rage. If only trigger action could be jammed by an app. If only I could design that app. If only the word of God was not heard murder. If all these strong 20-year-old boys in rage had something better to do. All these boys, their fathers say, are good boys. He called to say hello the other day. If only we really knew one another. If only Rampage could find something else besides skin to shred. If only blood could stay inside. Corpuscles, capillaries, veins, arteries, heart chambers. If only everyone understood that gay clubs are churches, shrines, green zones, and that this is a church massacre. If only beautiful young queer bodies did not have to be carried out and named. If only hatred had no ammo, then we'd have a chance this sunny blue-skied morning.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Words on a Wire, and we are speaking with our special guest, poet and performance artist and all-around expression mechanism, Annie Lanzilotto, who just read from her latest book, Hard Candy, Pitch Roll, Yaw. Annie, it's so good to hear your voice and to have you on our show. Congratulations on this new addition to your long body of work here.
Oh, I love you, Tim.
I know. And you and I have such a history together. And, you know, for our listeners, Annie is actually one of my teachers. You know, she's one of my mentors. And I met her, I don't know, too long ago. But I think we met in other incarnations and past lives, you know. And I mean that. But this book, Annie, I tried to describe it recently to a friend of mine. They were asking me, what are you reading? And I said, let me just tell you the title. And, you know, it's going to take me an hour to tell you what this book, you know, entails. But how would you describe it for our listeners in three words?
Well, it's a double book, upside down to each other.
Yeah.
Two books in one. I guess that's three or four words.
Right.
And it meets in the middle in a gallery of spiral poetry. So you got to turn the book around and around and around to read it.
I love it.
And the thrust of one book, it's called Hard Candy, Caregiving, Mourning, and Stage Light is the subtitle.
Yeah.
And it's about my experiences with my mom in the last years of her life. And the thrust is that you have to enjoy your suffering. You have to eat it up with a spoon. Because if you, in my experience, when I could... When I mean enjoy, I mean like play in the suffering like you play in mud. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's lessons, there's beauty in all our hardship, no matter how friggin' hard.
Yeah.
And we can't avoid it. We got to go through it. And my experience is caregiving my mother through all the pain and suffering was, you know, a beautiful, beautiful, precious, precious time of life. And that's the thrust. Like, don't complain about it. Find ways to live in it and be in it. That's the thrust.
I do want to get into the second part, which is pitch roll yaw, but I want to give a little bit of time to Hard Candy first, because it was the first section I read when I opened it. You know, I was like, I wasn't sure which side to read first. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to go with Hard Candy. And man, you know, it's absolutely hard. And it begins with, and at the same time, it's exactly what you're describing here. At the same time, it begins with your mother. And, you know, I had the privilege of meeting your beautiful mother once upon a time.
You ate her meatballs.
Yes, I did. She made a gorgeous pasta with meatballs that day. And we ate and we laughed. And so your poetry and your recollections of that time with her was so heartbreaking for me to read. But your words about your mother are tender and graceful and grace. And you chronicle your last days with your mother, caring for her and watching her fade to the next realm. Why was this important for you to capture in writing?
I think that's how I survive, number one. And I think also, number two, you know, I was tired of people telling me, oh, you have a special relationship with your mother. Mm. But the truth is, you have to work at it. And so I wanted to put it down in writing to say, like, you know, this is a human experience that is work, and you got to do it. You could do it.
Yes.
Don't single me out like we're so special. We struggle like everybody in our relationship. So I think the words help that.
Right. And like, I think of your poem, I mean, all of your poems in this side, in this section of the book, but the poem specifically, Reverse Pieta, you know, where your mother says to people, I'm destroying my daughter's life. I'm destroying my daughter's life, you know, and yet there you are, you know, working at it.
And that was heartbreaking to hear. That was, you know, the hardest thing to hear ever. Mm. I mean, for, you know, a mother to say that. Why don't you want me to read that poem?
Yes, please do. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Reverse Pieta. With the pietà over here, only its daughter holding a skin and bones mother, head all the way back. I hold my mother, skin, bones, breath, still she breathes. I wonder about the individuality of breath as it miraculously moves her body in waves, her chest fills and ebbs. What moment the breath will wander off, go some other way? She says, I am destroying my daughter's life. You gave me life, I say. You've already done all this for me. It's my greatest privilege to help you. This is where I want to be. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. She repeats to friends and neighbors, I am destroying my daughter's life. I wonder if Jesus ever said that to Mary.
To our listeners, you are listening to Words on a Wire, and we have our special guest on the line, Annie Lanzalotto, and she's just read a poem from her collection, her latest collection called Pitch Roll Yaw, Yaw and Hard Candy. So go ahead, Annie, you were going to say?
No, I just was saying that was the hardest thing to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Because, look, we all need each other.
Right.
You know, maybe you could say we all destroy each other's lives sometimes. Like, when we're in crisis, we need other people to go there with us.
Yeah.
And that is life. It's not destroying each other's life.
Right.
It's really a golden part of life, that intimacy of intense suffering, poverty, illness, dying, being born, you know, all the vulnerable times of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's, for me, you know, I've had a lot of time in those trenches in illness, and there's a lot of beautiful love there. To me, the scale of life is love. So, you know, sometimes in times of great crisis, there's more love quotient there.
Mm.
Sometimes when we're all fine and we think everything's fine, you know, we sometimes don't behave as well. You know what I mean?
I do. I do know what you mean.
Like, the love quotient goes down. We forget to say this. We forget to hug. You know, it's kind of natural. But anyways, it was a hard feeling, you know, to think that that's how she felt.
It's interesting, you know, what I love about your literary voice, your voice on the page, is that you capture that tenderness, that love quotient, as you refer to it. You capture the vulnerabilities. And at the same time, the language you use to do this is like hammers and, you know, wrenches. You know, you use these hard-hitting words and images, you know, to capture that. And that's what I love about all of your writing. In fact, as I was reading Hard Candy, I couldn't help but just recall your phenomenal memoir, which came out a few years ago, L is for Lion, a Bronx Butch freedom memoir. And that, to me, that same voice is there, the wisdom, hard truth, all of life raw on the page. Do you feel like this new book is an extension maybe of that memoir?
You know, I guess if it's branches on a tree, you could say that. But there's also other stories that may be the maiden trunk that extends from that memoir. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a branch on the tree for sure.
Right. And then, okay, so then like on the other side of this, you have Pitch Roll Yah. How would you describe Pitch Roll Yah in comparison to Hard Candy?
Pitch Roll Yah is divided into 14 stations, which are sections of the book that are either thematically or stylistically united. And the words Pitch Roll Yah are the three axes of movement of any body. So I learned about that when I was learning to fly airplanes.
Of course you were.
You could look it up, but basically pitch, you go up and down to the horizon. Roll, you go, if you picture a motorcycle, like in a bank turn. Mm-hmm. And yaw, if you shake your head side to side, like that's yaw, side to side. So the three axes of movement for me, you know, were a metaphor for how kind of out of level sailing I felt in life during this time, like during the time of illness and caregiving. And how do you maintain your gyroscope, like to get back to level ground? So that's the thrust of this book, but it's a collection through several years, and encompasses a lot of stuff from gay sex, lesbian sex, to the caregiving. There's a poem called Butch for Hire, which is about what a great caregiver a butch is. It starts out, if I was a little old lady, I'd want a butch caregiver. Butches are vigilant as German shepherds, sleep with their ears cocked, on call 24/7. Follow you to the bathroom in the middle of the night. Clear your path. You are queen. And it's in recognition of caregivers, of all kinds. Yeah. But what it takes, like the vigilance it really takes to do it right. And in a sense, that's a metaphor for society. If we went around really, so to speak, mothering each other and the earth and communities, you know, on an individual basis, without the intervention of NGOs or institutions, universities, just as people, just neighbor to neighbor, that's how we take, just neighbor to neighbor and whatever you could do, whatever's in your power, not what's without, you could say, oh, no, Southern Italians, like where I'm from, say, oh, no posso fare niente. Like, what could be done? What can I do? But what can we do?
Right.
We say, faccio io, I could do it, I could make it. So that's kind of how I believe in walking around and doing what I can, helping what I can, being where I can. And that is caregiving to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that comes across in Pitch Roll Yah. And at the same time, I feel like it's a different sort of refraction of light in this collection of poetry than from Hard Candy, where Hard Candy really is it's really a collection of these hard poems about your mother and sort of, being a caregiver. And Pitch Roll Yah extends that idea, but at the same time, it also illuminates it in a different way it kind of turns it outwards, as you're referring to it, into the community, our immediate community and the world community. And it also kind of feels almost more celebratory even than Hard Candy. It almost has a sense of celebrating life. But aside from the content of Pitch Roll Yah, I mean, what I loved about your poetry in that section is this total unapologetic freedom that you always seem to have, not just with language or content and subject, but also with form and ideas. I really think, like, not since Allen Ginsberg have I read another poet that kind of really just blows open and says, there are no boundaries, no rules. I can do whatever I want on this page, and I'm willing to go anywhere unapologetically. And you do that here. You have these, like, seesaw poems. I mean, you come up with all these great forms based on your own experiences, like what you just referred to. You took pilot flying lessons and now you're thinking of Pitch Roll Yah. It's, how do you come up with these ideas, and how do you, I don't know, can you speak to that a little bit?
I think it's acceptance that whatever, like getting your own ego out of the way. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you know, people that I do mentor, one thing they have a hard time with is it good enough, blah, blah, blah. That's the ego getting in the way. If you get out of the way, like if there's a line across the page, that's what it is. Mm. If there's a melody attached, that's what it is. If it's, you know, in a some kind of form you don't recognize, that's what it is. Like, get out of the way and let things be what they are. If humans controlled everything, you know, that's how we get in trouble.
Mm. I mean, that almost sounds like like Lorca's idea of duende, you know, the idea of kind of this organic impulse of language and connection, and you just allow yourself to put it on the page as it presents itself without ego, or ideally without ego. Do you feel like that's along the lines of what you're
kind of capturing? Cool. Like, there's this poem, you know, a little mystery to me. I was walking around my mother's wishy woods. There's a lot of flowers. So I'm walking around and this line pops in my head, if flowers had minds. And I was looking at all the flowers, and there's a poem with that name that I wrote in Petrolio. So it just begins, if flowers had minds, they would open like hands to the five directions. If flowers had minds, they would stand and reach for the sun. If flowers had minds, they would grow as tall as they could. And it goes on. And it was this feeling of just that flowers do have minds, obviously, because they do everything right. They don't destroy each other. They pop up on abandoned sites, and it lists all the attributes. They don't try to travel, and, you know, whatever they do, whatever I thought they do. But now, if I were to sit down and say, write a poem about flowers, like, it would never happen.
Yeah.
But if I just accept what comes out, what pops up, like a bird landing, like what melody or phrase pops up, and just let it be whatever it is without judging it, then that's what it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know what? Why don't you share a poem from Pitch Roll? Yeah, it can be that one, Flowers, or it could be any other poem that you feel like.
Just... Sure. All right. Here's one called Bronx Grotto, and it's written in Bronx vernacular. Bronx Grotto. Go down 3-4 blocks, take a left on Allerton, a right on Matthews, and you're right there at the corner of Mace. They got everything over there. Whatever they got in France, at Lourdes, we got right over here. St. Lucie with her two sets of eyeballs. Yeah, two on a plate, two and a half. Dripping wet Madonnas, we got, forget about it. All the saints, you name them, they're standing there. But you got to get there early to bless your car. Because it's late now in the day, but you got to wait on the line. Forget the feast days. Even if you really want, wait a second. If you wait, forget about it. You got to get buckets. You got buckins, you got basins, what have you. Otherwise, you got to go back and forth and back and forth and wait on the line all over again. Now, if you continue on Allerton and hook around on Mace, there's a Johnny Pump there. You can pull right over there or double park. That's where the line forms, and you're better off. Then you go in behind the gate with your buckets, and you fill up on the holy water coming down the rocks. You'll see it. Follow the pilgrims there. Take all the holy water you want. You got to drink 7 glasses to cure anything. Oh, sure, there's lots of stories. Who couldn't walk, walks. Who couldn't see, sees. Who couldn't talk, talks. One lady I know started getting letters from her husband who was killed overseas. Yeah, when I ain't thinking straight, I put my whole head under flowing water. I stay there an hour, drink 7 glasses. Remember, 7 glasses. What's the sense of talking? When I was younger at night, I hopped the fence a couple of times when my old man was bothering me. I slept among the saints. It felt beautiful. Man, I looked up. There's St. Michael with his sword keeping guard over me. There's a Blessed Virgin with the full moon around her like some mink stole. Beautiful. The howling dog feeding St. Rocco a hunk of Italian bread. You feel protected, you know? Like you got bodyguards galore, spirit guards. I wear my scapula. That's my insurance policy. If I die with it on, I'm all set. That's the promise. San Antonio, San Francesco, San Judas. Those are my three point guards. They take care of everything. Yeah, we got everybody there, or whoever you like. The Monsignor Pasquale saw to it, and Gino cut all the rock himself. I pray to them guys, too. These guys, they make all of this for all of us. Once a year, I climb the holy stairs. On my bleeding knees, I climb. La Scala Santa. That's another story. What? I'm going to live and die by what the surgeon says? I don't think so. I go to my grotto, leave nothing to chance. Remember, seven glasses. Something in that flowing water takes care of everything. Flowing through them billion-year-old Bronx rocks.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Words on a Wire, and we are speaking with poet and performance artist Annie Lanzalotta, who just read a poem from her latest book, Hard Candy / Pitch Roll Y'all. Annie, that's a fantastic poem. And
yeah,
you know,
when you come to the Bronx, go to St. Lucie's Grotto. That's where you got to go.
And do we ask for you when we get there?
No, you pray to your saint, whoever your saints are. They replicated Lourdes over there.
Wow.
They did it as a devotion.
Wow.
So they replicated the grottos with the flowing waters and all the saints are up. I mean, it's, you know, an act of devotion.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, that's interesting because that reminds me, as you're saying that, you know, you're instructing me to, whenever I'm in the Bronx, to go there. And I have to tell this brief story. The first time I ever went to New York, landed in New York, I took a train and I met you. And there you were in your car in the city, and you drove around that city like a beast. I loved it. And you were like taking me to all these sites, and you'd like you'd park your car, park it illegally wherever you had to in the street. You'd put up your hood. You'd run around the front and go, okay, I'm going to pretend I'm working on my car. You go see that site. Go over there. You got about 10 minutes and come back. All right. And you're working on your car, pretending you're looking under the hood. And then I come back. You're like, did you get pictures? Did you see this? Did you do the blessing? All right, now get in. And we slam the hood and we drive to the next spot.
Well, you know, I wanted you to see things where there's no parking. So what are you going to do? You got the fast tour.
That was the best tour because then we stopped, picked up your brother. Your brother was screaming at people outside in the streets, out the window, people he knew. And they're going, hey, Johnny. And you're going, hey, Manny. And it was just like this whirlwind crazy. Like, I want to say within a matter of maybe 4 hours time, I probably saw more of that city than anybody's seen in one day. You know, it was just incredible. But anyways, that makes me also think about the physicality of your work, not just in the poetry, but in your performing. You're also a performance artist, you're a musician, you're a visual artist, and, you know, all that physicality, you know, it really, I mean, that's how I met you, was actually through physical theater. It was a physical theater, was my undergraduate at Naropa, and you were my teacher at the time, one of my teachers. And, you know, I know that you give workshops that are writing workshops that are also very rooted in physical gestures and movement. And I love this about your work. Why is getting the body involved in writing so critical for you?
I think it's a little bit like action painting, you know? Like, I call it action writing. It's to help, well, particularly with students, not you, like grade school. I mean, you're my teacher and mentor, too. Come on. So students are taught to write very constricted, right? Like in the lines, and we used to have penmanship and everything. So the mind could be tight when you're learning to write freely because you're taught to be restricted with grammar and spelling and to police your ideas.
Right.
So if I hang giant paper on the wall or on the floor and take out giant graphite sticks, which you hold like chalk, kind of.
Right.
Students are very, and I mean from, you know, 5 years old up to any age, to college, post-grad, whatever. All of us, to learn to write with freedom is, it's magic. It just allows you, like, that there's no such thing as a mistake. That's really what it comes down to in a nutshell.
And, you know, speaking of being physical, you know, one of the early projects where you did this performance there in the Bronx, I think it was in the Bronx, if I remember correctly, and where basically you turned this entire Italian market into a stage, you know, and I saw these photographs of it where, you know, you have mothers singing, you know, and you have an acrobat dangling over the butchered meats, and you had food samples mixed in with people doing monologues, and just that total kind of immersion, site-specific work. When you think of these ideas, how do they come to you? Is it, you know, I'm going to think of a great performance piece now, or is it, I'm going to write a poem today?
No.
How does it come to you?
No, it's just out of life. I mean, in that case, my mother had just had open heart surgery. So her first outing was 6 months later. That's how dire her, you know, recovery was. I said, Ma, where do you want to go? We threw the wheelchair in the car. I said, you want to go to the beach? You want to go, you know, overlook some water? Like, that's usually what's peaceful, right? Like, go to the water. She said, no, let's go to the Bronx to the market. So I really watched her transform with the flirtation of the deli guys and eating salami, which was forbidden on her recovery, and transform back into like a 16-year-old Bronx beauty.
Wow.
And I just, it just struck me, which really is an ancient idea, the market is a theater, period. The countertops are stages, period. That's what it always used to be. That's our history. I didn't think intellectually like that at the time, but when I got into the project and researching, you know, markets and theaters were always together, Commedia dell'arte, et cetera.
Yeah.
Where you put up a soapbox, you start performing, you stand on a barrel, whatever. But how it came was just watching my mother with the guy who sold salami. You know, I basically rented a stall there with seed money from Dancing in the Streets and brought up a piano. And we just started hanging out and listening to everybody. And then I listened to them for a couple of years, and we started doing, like, salons. And little by little, brought in microphones and lights and trapeze and monologues and built a balcony and a gondola. And, you know, the more I got to know the merchants, the more we could kind of collaborate on, like, a Fellini-esque, surreal ideas, but it all came out of what was there.
Right.
So the trapeze, for example, the butcher, Mario the butcher, sold organs. They had old-time pushcart peddler agreements with each other, like, if you sell one thing, I don't sell that, I sell something
else.
Right,
gotcha.
So Mario sold, like, brains and testicles and hearts and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's real peasant food, right? So,
and
feast food, like you wrap... You stuff a spleen, and then you wrap it with the parsley and an intestines. These are like Sicilian delicacies, peasant delicacies.
Right.
So he had a lot of downtime in his day. And I'd be like, Mario, what are you thinking about? Because, in other words, people weren't, like, standing there at lunchtime queuing up to buy brains and hearts, right?
Right.
Okay, so he was always thinking about beautiful women. So the more I talked to him and hung out with him and went on 4 a.m. jaunts to the market to buy the hearts and everything else. I said, all right, you're thinking about beautiful women. We got to put, how do we put, like, that vision in this butcher shop? So a friend of mine, Tanya Gagne, dressed very conservatively. We covered her, so to speak. You know what I mean? It wasn't objective. The thing is, in the butcher shops, the women's bodies were objectified.
Right.
This is a big subject I don't necessarily want to get into here, but...
Sure.
But we, in our, let's just say, proactive feminist, agitprop, confrontational way, worked with feminine beauty in the butcher shop, but in a way that was empowering. We'll just leave it like that.
Right.
In the Bronx, during market hours, with shoppers and merchants and cash registers. And, you know, very, like, old world, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing new about it. It's old, you know.
Yeah.
Except we were queer and everything else, which is old, too. Like, that's old, too. You don't have anything older.
Right.
I mean, you know, the Enochs in ancient Rome is the old, you know, like, the trans Enochs were the oldest, I don't know, look into it, whatever you want to call it, entertainment, sex, I don't know what you want to call it.
Sure.
I'm not, like, the scholar on, you know,
ancient
Roman and Greek sex. But the bottom line is, it's all always been there. There's nothing new about any of it.
Right.
About market theater, about trans, about any of it.
Right.
It's ancient, you know? And in America, I feel like we delude ourselves like we're inventing something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's ancient.
Yeah, right.
Come on. You know, and some reason this country, you know, post-colonial got very prudish. You could only be this way. You could only be that way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, let's not even get into politics, but it's like... the whole... Pan, trans, everything is ancient.
Right.
That we all are accepted and have a role, no matter what your ability is, your disability, your gender expression. That's the oldest. And again, I'm not talking as a scholar. I'm talking more as a Southern Italian artist with feelings and having read some things. Well, not as any expert, well, not as any academic.
Well, you're also a poet, and so, you know, you're a scholar of the people, you know, of the community. So, you know, you're a bard. And in that way, I think that your poetry is all-encompassing of those different sort of nuances of life that make us. That's what I think is beautiful about your poetry, and hard-hitting and necessary and vital. So with that, I want to ask you, do you have a short poem that you can take us out with?
Yeah, I'll give you a one line.
Yeah, all right.
A seesaw poem.
All right, great, yeah.
For her, the bullet was not aimed, but the sky refused to take it this time.
And with that, you have been listening to Words on a Wire, and our special guest today has been the wonderful poet, Bronx performance artist Annie Lancelotto, who just read from her latest book, Hard Candy, Pitch Roll Yaw. You have to go out and pick this up if you're a lover and appreciator of poetry and all things human. Thank you so much for being on our show, Annie. We love you.
I love you, and thanks to Guernica Editions in Canada that made this gorgeous book.
Yes, absolutely. Well, go out and pick it up, everyone. We'd like to thank our guest today, poet, performance artist, memoirist, musician, and my good friend Annie Lancelotto. Be sure to pick up her dazzling book, Pitch Roll Yaw, Hard Candy. You will not be disappointed. That wraps it up for this edition of Words on a Wire. I'd like to thank our fabulous producer, Lauren Terrazas. I am Tim Hernandez, and we'll see you next week, same time, same place, here on Words on a Wire, KTEP 88.5 FM.